Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to have join us Gail Packer. Gail is the CEO of Terracon, which is over 5,000 employee organization with over 150 offices. She started 17 years ago as a contractor at the company, and she has risen up through the ranks to become the CEO. She has some great lessons that she's learned throughout her career. She serves on a number of boards and is asked to speak about leadership, and she has some thoughts she's going to share I think will be helpful in your career. Looking forward to a conversation with Gail. Well, I guess first off, could you give us just a little bit of your story, a little bit of your career history?
Sure. Maybe I'll start at the end and then work backwards.
Sure. That's
great. So I am currently the president and CEO of Terracon Consultants, Inc. We're about a 5,500 employee-owned engineering firm here in headquartered in Kansas City with offices all across the U.S. I have been with the company about 17 years. So early in my career, when I graduated from college, I was in sales and public relations in the agriculture industry. Grew up on a farm, background in agriculture. And while I was working in sales, I also was going back to school, got my master's in ag economics and business management, and then went to law school. So graduated from law school and was working at a couple of big firms here in Kansas City. And had really had decided that I didn't really want to be a lawyer anymore. I worked with great people, great firms, great experience, but that really was not what I wanted to do when I grew up. So I announced to a group of friends middle of May in 2004, hey, I'm going to have a different job by June 30th. And they said, oh, what are you going to do? I'm like, I have no idea, but I got to stop doing this because sure. I was working a lot and, you know, you're sometimes really good at something, even if you don't really want to keep doing it. But you get stuck on that, you know, hamster wheel or merry-go-round, whatever you want to call it, that it's taking all of your time and energy, even though you know it's not what you want to be doing in 2 years or 5 years. And if you don't, for me anyway, you know, you could just keep doing that and wake up 2 years or 5 years later and still be doing the same thing. And I just said, I gotta make a change. So literally, you know, next day I got an email, friend of friend, Terracon's looking for a contract review attorney. And I was familiar with the company. I had some friends who'd worked there and it was a great company. So I actually started at Terracon as a contract review attorney on June 15th, beat my deadline by 2 weeks. Okay. And really thought I'd be at the company 12 to 18 months. Cause I'm like, I don't want to be an attorney. I don't want to review contracts for my career, but got promoted to general counsel, then took over a lot of our sort of back office functions and our mergers and acquisitions program. And then from there became our chief administrative officer, joined the board of directors in 2011 and was named president and CEO, president in 2018 and CEO in January of 2019.
Yeah, that's great.
It was an interesting way to get here.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that 12-month job has ended up to be a little bit longer term and different roles. But I love to talk to people that have had many careers within a company that have continued to grow and develop, and that's a great story. I always like to ask this question most guests, if you were able to spin back time, going back to kind of when you were first starting out and trying to figure out exactly what you wanted to be when you grew up. But if you could go back to that 22-year-old Gail and give her some advice, what would you tell her?
Yeah. So a couple of things. One, don't put anything on social media that you don't want your boss to see. Yeah. Right. Yep. We didn't have that issue when I was 22, but 22-year-olds right. today have that issue. So yep. I would just remind them of that. I think that there's this pressure, and I think maybe it's even increased over time that that adults at that age seem to think they have to have it all figured out. And they have to have an answer to, you know, exactly what you want to be when you grow up, and you have to have it planned out, and you have to start checking the boxes in order to get there. And I guess I would say, you know, don't put that pressure on yourself. Enjoy the ride, keep learning, keep asking questions, be open to opportunities, and don't close yourself off to something that you didn't even know about when you're 22. I mean, it's highly likely that the job that you will end up in is not even created at the time that you're 22.
Yeah.
And so just be open to that and just learn. I mean, ask questions. You can learn something from everybody who you work with, who you encounter, you know, and just use the opportunity to learn about that person and about what they do, and just be curious, because I think that's really what will help you figure out what's the right path for you, not what's the right path for somebody else.
Good advice. So any advice that you received early on that you, looking back on, should have ignored?
Yeah. A couple of things. I think that the challenge with, particularly when you're getting unsolicited advice, is that everybody thinks that they did it the right way and they want to tell you how you should do it. And I guess the comment that I would have on that is, you don't have to do it the way somebody else told you to. You can be very authentic to yourself and do it very well. And so letting go of those maybe requirements from someone else sometimes help a lot in figuring out what you really want to do.
So how important were mentors in your career? I've had some guests say, you know what, I had intentional mentors that I, you know, sought out, and others said, well, kind of from a distance, I read, you know, from people that I respected, or, you know, listened to people from a distance. Talk a little bit about that and the importance of that in your career.
Yeah, I would say I have had the absolute pleasure of having a lot of mentors in my life. You know, kind of going back to a little bit of that advice I would give a 22-year-old, I think there are so many people who can teach you something if you're willing to listen and willing to ask questions. And those people who have so much to teach you are extremely busy. So you need to make it easy for them to be able to have that conversation with you, or to make it important enough to make time to have that conversation with you. So you can't sit back and wait and say, I'd like a mentor. Sure, you actually right, have yep. to engage with people who you think, I really appreciate that, how this person does this, or how they've been successful here. And I want to figure out a way that I can buy them a cup of coffee or schedule 15 minutes. You know, don't ask for an hour, ask for 15 minutes and just have your questions ready, be prepared, ask them and move on. And sometimes that's all you get from that person is 15 minutes. And other times there's really a connection and you end up developing a years long, multi-years, sometimes just 6 months, whatever that time is, to really learn from that person and incorporate that into your own practice of leadership and your own career.
Yeah. Yeah. I think sometimes people are looking for that perfect mentor that can mentor them on every area of their career. And there's nobody out there that has all of those qualities. So you got to look for those people that are great in an area that you want improvement. That's
great. I think there's a, you know, that if people can find that person, that's great for them. I guess I have really valued hearing so many different perspectives and sometimes asking five or six people who I really respect the same set of questions and getting five or six really different answers. And just spending some time thinking about that and then applying that to, how does that apply to me? How does that apply to my style, to my goals? And how do I really listen and filter and then apply what I'm learning? And getting those different perspectives, I think, makes you a better, more well-rounded leader.
So you started out as a contractor, so you didn't have a team to manage. You managed yourself and your projects and that. So you grew as a leader. Think back to that time when you had the opportunity to lead your first team. And again, what do you wish you would have known earlier about managing people and leading a group of people?
Yeah. I think like most people, you start out managing a group of people who are doing jobs that you used to do, you know, so you kind of, you're a doer and then you're a manager of the doers of things that you knew how to do. And that's great because you feel like you know what you're doing and you can give them specific advice and manage them really well. I think the big step comes when you all of a sudden are managing people who do jobs that you have no idea how to do that job. And you have no idea exactly what they do all day, every day. And that really is an opportunity for you to grow as a leader in terms of, again, you don't have to do their job, but you have to lead them and manage them to do their job better. And that's where the art of asking powerful questions and building trust and building relationships and holding people accountable really comes into play. And that's that first big step. And I know when I took that role on for the first time, I was managing safety and procurement and IT. And I hired a coach. How do you do this? I don't know anything about these areas. but it really was helpful to have somebody help me understand how to be a better manager and leader in my style and really lean into that, asking questions and not feeling like you have to have the answers, but asking questions for the sake of making that team better simply by the questions that you're asking.
So as you're hiring people to your team, to your executive team now, and what are some of the things that you look for and things that maybe questions you ask? And some people don't want to give away their questions because somebody might be listening though, to be prepared for. But anyway, what are some things that you do as far as to hire top level people?
I think one of the things that make you successful as a leader is to hire people who have better or not better, different strengths than you have and are better at some things than you are. I think that the beauty of building a highly functioning team is that everybody has different strengths and different perspectives to bring to the table. That makes the team better. I mean, if we all are sitting around the table and we all do the same things really well and have the same perspective, we're going to fail. Because we're missing huge parts of the problem or the discussion out there. So I think that's the first challenge is how do you overcome your own biases? Because we all have them. We want to hire people like us.
Right. Yep.
How do you build into your own interview process your set of questions that really help you get outside of that bias and embracing people who are bringing different strengths and different perspectives to you. And I joke with our CFO all the time. I'm like, I need you to be black and white about all of this stuff. Cause I'm not, we have to have this conversation.
Sure.
we really lean into that. I think some of those questions though, that you want to ask in the interview are questions that show this person is willing to be vulnerable. They're willing to admit when they made a mistake and they're willing to know that they learned from that mistake and move forward. So if I'm in an interview with somebody and that person has done everything perfect throughout their entire life, I don't believe them. I don't think they're authentic. Right. I don't think that they are a good team member. I don't think that they are somebody I want to work with. I want to work with people. I want to hire people who say, yeah, this was a mistake and here's what I learned from it. And I will not do that again. I might make another mistake. I'll try not to. But if I do, I will own it. And this is what I'll learn from it. And I'll move forward. I think that demonstrates integrity. I think it demonstrates a willingness to learn and a willingness to be part of something bigger than themselves. And I think those are really important things.
We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Bruce Tolgan, author of The Art of Being Indispensable at Work, published by Harvard Business Review Press. If you like listening to this show as much as I enjoyed being a guest on this show, maybe you'll be a fan of my new podcast, The Indispensables. Each week, I ask my guests what sets them apart in the workplace, what makes them tick, and what makes them so successful. I've interviewed some amazing people at all levels and organizations of all shapes and sizes with some amazing stories, including the former chief of staff of the United States Army, General Dennis Reimer, New York Times columnist Ron Lieber, Kara Golden, the founder and CEO of Hint, and many, many more. Consider please listening and subscribing to The Indispensables on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to this show.
So you're managing, there's over 5,000 employees. When you get to a certain size, it becomes even more challenging to keep the culture healthy. And I see you've got some words behind you that probably describe kind of what your culture is about. But talk a little bit about that. How do you manage culture with that many people?
Yeah. So the words behind me are the company's values. Caring, courage, curiosity, excellence, integrity, and prosperity. And we have these posters in all of our offices. We actually have values cards that we give to people when they're demonstrating that value in their day job. So we really try to tie everything that we're doing as a company in our communications, or when we're talking about something new that's coming up, we tie it back to what are these values, or how are we making decisions using these values going forward? I think the important part about culture is that it's actually the stuff that happens every day, not the stuff you talk about, but it's the stuff that's actually happening every day. And you have to lead that by example, but you can't be the only person leading it by example. So culture becomes what you tolerate, not what you say. And so if someone is behaving in a way, particularly a leader, is behaving in a way that's not consistent with the culture, you've got to have a tough conversation about that, because they either need to change their behavior or they maybe are not a good fit for your culture. But to leave somebody in place that does not demonstrate those values and is not living your culture undermines everything you're doing in your culture. And that becomes really challenging when you have not just 5,000 employees, but you have 160 different locations. So you can have these statements about what the company culture is or where we want to be as a company. And if employees don't see that happening in their local office, they don't believe you. And it just becomes words on a wall, not something they actually live and see and feel every day.
This last year and a half has been a challenge for most organizations, just to, because it's uncharted water. And, you know, I think we've definitely have seen some improvement, but a lot of offices are still virtual, and some are coming back in the fall. Some are trying to figure things out. But how have you, what lessons have you learned in the last year and a half that you think would be helpful for people to also hear about?
Yeah. It's certainly been a challenge with our workforce. Actually, about half of our employees are working in the lab or working in the field on construction sites every day. So half of our workforce had to adapt really quickly last March with this unseen danger out there. And, you know, with safety being one of our foundational beliefs in the company, that if you can't do it safely, you can't do it. How do we keep those people safe? How do we continue to serve clients, but keep our folks in the field and the lab safe? So we spent a lot of time. We put together a task force specifically on COVID-19 protocols and safety, and how do we keep those people who are out in the public every day? They were essential workers. How do we keep them safe? Then we have the other half of the organization who we basically said on a Friday, on Monday, start working from home. Because the danger here is in numbers. And so in order to keep our field and lab people safer when they come into the office, we don't want too many other people in the office. We want you all to be working from home. And that was a real shift for us. I would say that as an organization, we had some flexibility before March of 2020. And as we're coming through this, we've learned we can be flexible. We can have more hybrid working environments, more virtual working environments. You do lose some things around culture and some things along those lines with that totally virtual. So how do we come back, not come back, but how do we move forward from this in a way that really embraces that hybrid work environment? And that involves having conversations with people about what does the client need? What does the business need? What does the team need? And what do you need as an individual? And how do we make that work? And so we, much to the dismay of a lot of our managers who are very linear in their thinking, like, just tell me the rules and we can make it happen. You know, the rule here is flexibility. Mm-hmm. How do we make that happen? And so we're still in the middle of that. And I think the other challenge as leaders is that we all become very accustomed to having the answers ahead of time, knowing exactly where we're going, and then just getting everybody aligned to doing that. And this situation, even in the past 3 or 4 weeks where the COVID-19 numbers have been going back up again in various places, you know, where we thought we were going to have post-COVID plans going into place after Labor Day, that's not going to be true in many locations. So how do we continue to demonstrate, learn from, and adapt and be flexible around all of this? And I think that's the beauty and the silver lining of this entire process, is that we've learned how to work differently. Let's not give up on what we've learned and just go back to February of 2020. Let's actually move forward in a much more positive way that's sustainable long-term.
So I think one of the questions I get asked by a number of people that I work with is, you know, they're either thinking about serving on a board or they're a new CEO and they have never worked with a board. Talk a little bit about that, the importance. And you've served on boards, and you also have a board that you work with. Talk a little bit about just some thoughts around that and the importance of kind of lessons you wish you would have known earlier.
Yeah. So I like would think about this question from maybe three different perspectives. One is just in the CEO seat and how do you use your board effectively? Mm-hmm. One was, you know, I was a board member of our company before I was in the CEO role. So kind of how do you differentiate that board member hat versus your operations hat that you have on? And then I also serve on the board of another company outside of our company. So maybe that external board perspective as well.
Yeah, that's great. I
think that the one element that runs through all of those situations, I guess, for me is transparency. You know, the board is there to really provide the best advice possible, strategic direction, being a sounding board for the CEO and the manager of the company to help direct that. So if you're not being fully transparent, either as a management member or the CEO, and also as a board member, then you're not doing the role justice, any of the roles justice. So I think that's really important, no matter whether you're on the board, a member of management team, or an external board member from the company. I think that's true all the way across. I think the other challenge that you have, maybe just for a second on the internal perspective, so you become a board member of your company, it is really hard to differentiate that discussion in the boardroom of strategic direction and where does the company need to go versus, you know, the other part of your brain is sitting there thinking about how do we get that done, you know, and pulling that sort of operation tactical discussion into the boardroom, which is not where it belongs. But that's really hard to do. And I think when you have a board that is entirely internal, that really becomes a challenge for the board. And that outside perspective can really help you with that discussion in the boardroom. But the challenge then with an outside perspective is that asymmetrical information. You know, when you are the person who's not in the company and you walk into a board meeting, understanding enough of what's happening and asking and having enough information to ask the really valuable questions, that's where the challenge really is. And so I think that asymmetrical information and your responsibility as a board member to keep asking the questions to get the information is really important. And if you're management, not to be offended or put off by the fact that this board member is asking me all these questions, because they're just trying to understand and making sure that you keep that perspective in mind when you're on the management side of things too is really important. So I think it's mostly that transparency and the challenge of asymmetrical information and sharing it accordingly.
Yeah, no, I love the three perspectives, and that's, I think, will be helpful to people. Think back, you know, I know you probably look at, as far as, you know, continuing to learn and develop and grow. You mentioned at different stages of your career that you had to continue to develop. Are there any books that you recommend to your senior staff, or, you know, people that you probably are involved with as far as on a mentoring relationship, that you would recommend that they read and that's helpful for you?
I'm an avid reader. I read over 100 books a year. In wow. general, I really, really enjoy reading. And I like to read everything from business books to nonfiction to fiction and kind of everything in between, some biographies. So some of my favorites, and I guess I don't recommend them to everybody because I read such a wide variety of things. It doesn't always work. I do have one book that my executive team is reading right now called True Professional. And it was a book that was written in the 80s, I believe. It's really around professional services industry, but it just talks about, you know, that self-motivation and, you know, understanding what a true professional means and that client experience and the employee experience that drives it. And it's really, I think it's a powerful book. It's not a difficult read. Lots of people can read it, even if they don't like to read. So I enjoy that one. another book that I recommend to a lot of people, especially as they're moving through the ranks, so to speak, of a company, is the book Switch by Chip and Dan Heath. And it's really about change management and how do you truly get a person and then by definition, an organization to change. I think it's really powerful. I think it's got a great metaphor in there that you can just see showing up in all different places when you're really trying to change people and change an organization. I think it's really powerful. I really like that book a lot. I love Team of Rivals, which is by Doris Kearns Goodwin, about President Lincoln and his cabinet and how he selected his cabinet, how he managed his cabinet. He basically put all of his political opposition on his cabinet because he felt like they were the smartest people and they would get the best debate and ultimately then come up with the best ideas. And it was also a very politically savvy move too, in that, you know, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. But I think it's a great book. It's daunting. I mean, it's 500, 600 pages long. It's daunting. So I don't always recommend that to people who don't really enjoy reading, but I think it's pretty powerful, powerful book. Recently I've got one more for you.
Okay, great.
This is one where I've really been trying to make sure that as a leader, I am challenging myself to continue to learn and understand different perspectives. And in the past year and a half, since the death of George Floyd and a lot of just kind of the social unrest and some of the reckoning that we need to do as a company or a country and a company, you know, to make sure that we're understanding all the perspectives of our employees. I really found the book Cast by Isabel Wilkerson very powerful. I got a lot out of that book. And if as a leader, you're looking to kind of further your own journey and understanding, I think that's a fantastic book to listen to about the experience of Black Americans. It's fantastic.
So the first book that you mentioned, True Professional, is that by Maester? David Maester?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. David Maester.
Yep. Uh-huh. All right.
Yes.
That was one of my books that I was recommended a number of years ago. And yeah, that's a great book. Well, any quotes that you have on your desk or somewhere that that you like to refer to?
You know, I have a lot of them. I'm a visual learner.
Right.
I actually have 6 little post-it notes at the bottom of my screen at any given point in time. So I have to admit here that I am a huge Ohio State fan. I went to Ohio State for undergrad and master's degree.
Okay.
Lifelong Buckeye. And I have a quote from Woody Hayes, which is be fair, firm, and friendly. And I think that applies to us as humans, also to us as leaders. That's really important. I have a quote from John Glenn about the happiest people he's ever known are those who have given their lives to something bigger than themselves. And I think that really speaks to servant leadership. And I think that is really important. I also have a Dr. Seuss quote that is, sometimes you never know the power of a moment until it becomes a memory. And I think that one in the past year has really, that one's on my screen right now. It's really speaks to that personal relationship and like the conversation that you have with somebody, that if you're fully present in that conversation and the meaning of that conversation, it might be the last conversation you have with that person, but it's really meaningful, both for you as a person then, and then also the memory of that. And I think that's pretty important.
Yeah. Great. So outside of work, what do you like to do to recharge?
Yeah. I love to travel and see the world. I love live music. I mentioned that I was at the Foo Fighters last week. I have 2 really big dogs that I spend a lot of time with and really just enjoy getting together with friends and talking, laughing. I do enjoy reading as well. So if I'm going to recharge by myself, I generally have a book in my hand. I don't watch a lot of TV. I watch some, but I really enjoy reading a lot more.
Great. So any parting advice that you would give to a new or up and coming leader?
I guess I would say that we're always building our brand. You know, everything that you're doing, especially with social media and, you know, every aspect of you and your life needs to be authentic because that's your brand. Good or bad or whatever, but that's just part of life and enjoy it. And embrace it. I think it's fantastic.
Well, thanks, Gail. I've really enjoyed our conversation. I know this is going to be helpful for those that, that listen each week and definitely, wish you continued success as you lead your organization. And, I'll have to be on your reading list. If you're reading 100 books a year, you can provide us a steady content of reviews of books. So, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Mark, for this opportunity. It's really great. And I just enjoy spending time with you. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.